Reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute, text number 1. Shri Shri Bhagavan Uvacha
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha
Maya Sakta Manakparta
Maya Sakta Manakparta
Yogam Yunjan Mad Ashraya
Yogam Yunjan Mad Ashraya
Asamshayam Samagramam
Asamshayam Samagramam
Yatha Gyasisi Tatsprinu
Yatha Gyasisi Tatsprinu
The Supreme Lord said, Mahi
to me,
Asakta,
Mana,
mind attached,
Partha,
Osanaprita, Yogam,
self-realization,
Yunjan,
practicing.
But Ashrayaha,
in consciousness of me,
Krishna consciousness,
Asamshayam,
without doubt,
Samagram,
completely,
Mam,
me,
Yata,
how,
Gyasyasi,
you can know,
Tat,
that.
Srinu,
try to hear.
Translation
and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Purport, in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna, and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. In the first 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spiritual soul, spirit soul, capable of elevating himself to different types of yoga, to self-realization by different types of yoga. At the end of the 6th chapter, it's clearly explained that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, not otherwise. Impersonal Brahma-jyoti or localized Paramatma realization are not full knowledge of the absolute truth because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubt. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones in the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahma Jyoti and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna conscious yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the 6th chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna is made possible by prescribed devotional service in 9 different forms, of which Shravana is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, touch Trinu or hear from it. No one can be in greater authority than Krishna, and therefore by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna conscious person. One has therefore to hear from Krishna directly, or from a pure devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart puffed up with academic education. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is described in the 2nd chapter of the 1st canto as follows. Srinvitam svakata Krishna punya shravanam kirtana ridyan taksto hibhajani vidunoti saritsatam Nashta praesh babadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttamashloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki tadarajastamo bhava kamalovadaya seye cheta eta anavidam sitam satvam satve prasidati evam prasanamanaso bhagavat bhakti yogataha bhagavatatva vijnanam mukta sangha sajayate vridyante vidyate ridya granti shidyante sarvasamashaya shiyante chasikarmani drishte vatmanishvare. To hear about Krishna from the Vedic literatures or to hear from him directly through the Bhagavad Gita is itself righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as the best wishing friend and purifies the devotee. And this, who constantly engages in hearing of him. This way the devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. As he hears more about Krishna in the Bhagavatam and from the devotees, he becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. By developing the devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion, ignorance, and thus material lust and hankering are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by devotional service, and understands the science of God perfectly. As bhakti yoga severs the heart knot of material affection, and one comes at once to the stage of a samshayam, samagram, understanding of the absolute truth, supreme personality of Godhead. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from the devotee, in his devotee in Krishna consciousness, one understands the science of Krishna. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Maya Saktamanath Parata Yogam Yun Janmarashaya Asamsham Samagramam Yatagyasasi Tatsutrinu. Now hear from me, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from death. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutundeve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasyatya Desatarane. This is the beginning of the middle section of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita has 18 chapters. Does anyone know the name of all the 18 chapters? You know the name of all of them.
I try.
Okay.
Observing armies.
On the Battle of Kurukshetra, right.
Contents of Gita summarized. Karma Yoga, transcendental knowledge, action in Krishna consciousness.
Karma Yoga, action in Krishna consciousness.
Jnana Yoga. Knowledge of Absolute, attaining Supreme,
most confidential, most confidential
knowledge,
yes,
opulence of the Absolute,
universal
form. Devotional service.
Nature.
Consciousness, enjoyer.
Nature, consciousness, and the enjoyer. The enjoyer and consciousness.
You know,
Three modes.
Three modes of material.
15. Yoga, the Supreme Person. 16. Divine and demoniac natures. 17. visions of faith. And 18?
Perfection of renunciation.
Yes. Summary. Conclusion, perfection of renunciation. There are 6 chapters at the beginning which deal with the different types of yoga, as explained here, that elevate us to the position of appreciating what is Krishna consciousness. In the 7th chapter, Krishna will say, Yesham antikatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva mohanir muktva bhajante mam drudavrataha. That only persons who have practiced the principles of religion in their previous lives and in this life, whose sinful reactions are completely annihilated, can accept devotional service and engage in it with determination. In other words, there must be a process by which we can follow, which will bring us to the platform where we can appreciate something about Krishna consciousness. Namely, there must be a process to bring us to the mode of goodness, just as there are many processes to bring us to passion and ignorance, and the whole world is full of them. Especially if one acts like an animal, one will come to the mode of ignorance. If one acts in order to enjoy the material world, even according to some real regulation, one will come to the mode of passion. If one follows the Vedic literature and renounces both passion and ignorance, by doing dutiful work, one will come to goodness. So there are different ways of working in the material world, and each way will bring us to some particular situation or some particular type of consciousness. But Krishna, in the first 6 chapters, systematically defines how to work dutifully. Muniraj, if you're tired, stand up. Good old eyes. As soon as they close, it's not usually not deep meditation. That dutiful work means that Krishna knows how he thinks we should utilize the body. For instance, in the Vana and Ashram system, there are dutiful activities to satisfy Vishnu. Varnashrama vicharitaha purushena pumak pumam Vishnu aradite panda nanyanitotoshi karanam. There are duties for the Shudras, for the Vaishyas, for the Kshatriyas, and for the Brahmanas. And the main duty that everyone is centered around is Jagavai Vishnu. There are so many sacrifices, and all of them were ultimately meant to satisfy Vishnu. How do we satisfy Vishnu by such activities? Basically, simply by there is a desire to direct something towards Vishnu. Actually, Vishnu is not really that much satisfied by these jagas. The only thing he's satisfied is the fact that people are trying to make some interest, have some interest in satisfying him, and therefore recognizing that they depend on him. Other than that, Krishna says, Tri vidyamam samapa putapapa jagna ishva svargatim pratariyante Trivijamam samapa putapapa jagni ishva svargatim pratariyante te punya surandilokam ashnanti devyam divi deva bhogan. Those who study the Vedas, the 3 Vedas, and perform the sacrifices recommended, drink the samarasa, they go to the heavenly planets where they, or the planet of Indra, where they can enjoy samarasa. Trivijamam samapa putapapa, becoming purified from all their sinful reactions. Vaivijamam samapa putapapa jagna ishva svargatim pratariyante. So they attain to the planet of Indraloka. Te tam trivijamam samapa putapapa jagna ishva svargatim pratariyante te tam asadhyalokam ashnanti divi deva deva bhogan. Te punya asadya sarandi lokam ashnanti divyam divi deva bhogan. So by such pious activities, they take birth in the heavenly planets where they enjoy the godly delights. But te tam bhuktva swarga loka vishalam shine punya marti loka vishanti evam trai dharman anupapanam katagatam kama kama labhate. When they thus enjoyed such vast heavenly sense pleasure, when their pious activities are used up, they again come back to this earthly planet. And therefore, through such Vedic sacrifices, they enjoy only flickering happiness. In other words, Krishna is awarding those who follow his instructions in the Vana Ashrama system by a process of elevation to different material planets, heavenly planets, or higher planetary systems. But such rewards are only temporary. But still, there has to be some impetus for some advancement. And therefore, the Vedas are full of different proposals that if you perform such and such sacrifice, you'll get such and such result. And therefore, getting used to performing sacrifices and getting the results, people develop faith in the Vedas, which gradually leads them to get the intelligence by which they can actually study the Vedas. And when they study the Vedas, they find out that even in heavenly planets, people are suffering. That Indra has a hard time. He's being cursed to become a hog sometimes on the earth planet. Sometimes he's being chased by demons. Sometimes he's thrown out of his heavenly kingdom. Sometimes he has eyes all over his body. He's being cursed by sages. Therefore, one's enthusiasm to go to the heavenly planets and experience something similar to the problems that we find in this planet diminishes. Instead, one hears about better types of sacrifices by which one can become elevated to higher planets, such as by performing different types of jagas or performing different types of austerities, celibacy, cleanliness, etc. And therefore, rather than seek some heavenly planet like Indraloka, they desire to go to higher planets such as Mahaloka, Jnanaloka, Tapaloka, and even Brahmaloka. But even there, one finds out about different types of problems that one may encounter there. That even in Brahmaloka, one may have to die. Therefore, one becomes interested in studying the upasana kanda, which describes about liberation from the bodily concept of life, merging in Brahman, etc. Or realization of Paramatma through austerities such as the mystic yoga process. And one becomes interested in performing such activities. But even there, if one studies, one finds out that even such attainments are temporary. And that the only real permanent benefit is by performance of devotional service. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paripasate. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paripasate. Nityam yoga. Nityam, let's see. Tesham eva. Tesham niti biyuktanam yoga shemam vaham yaham. Tesham yoga viniktanam eva. Tesham nitya. Vyuktana. Tesham eva vyuktana. Yoga shemam bahamyaham. Tesham nitya vyuktana. Avyuktana. Fixed in devotion. To those who are meditating in my transcendental form, ananyas chintayantomam, ye jana paripasite, tesham nitya vyuktanam, yoga shemam bahamyaham. Constantly engaged in fixed in devotional service, to them I carry what they lack and they preserve what they have. In other words, there is an alternative for seeking temporary happiness either here in this earthly planets or in the heavenly planets or merging in Brahman. One also can become fixed in devotional service and become conscious of Krishna. And there the reward is an eternal existence full of happiness and complete consciousness. And at the end of the sixth chapter, Krishna had said that Of all the yogis, first he says, the pasi vyodi ko yogi, jnani vyobi di ko di kaha, karmi vyascha di ko yogi, tasmad yogi bhavarjana. The yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the fruit of worker, greater than the empiricist, the philosopher. Therefore, Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. But of all the yogis, yoginam api sarvesham, madgaten antaratmana, shadavan bhajate yomam sameyuktatmo mataha. But of all the different yogis, and there are so many yogis, one who's always meditating upon Krishna, fixing his mind upon Krishna, and engaged in Krishna's transcendental loving service, is the most intimately united with Krishna in yoga, and is the highest of all. Therefore, in the beginning of the seventh chapter, Krishna will explain what that yogi is, the highest yogi that Krishna described. And here he says, that highest yogi begins just by hearing about Krishna. Seemingly not a very difficult process, anyone can hear, seemingly. But actually, not a very easy process. As we can see, everyone's not flocking in here to perform bhakti yoga. We're not trying to keep, you know, have a person at the door to keep the bhakti yoga classes from overflooding. No, it's not a very easy process. Although, in one sense, it doesn't require gymnastics. It doesn't require any great intellect. It doesn't require any great austerity. We can see that probably none of the devotees can sit up straight. Except when we mention it, then some of them become a little bit more straight. None of their devotees probably are great scholars. Very few. None of them are about to commit great austerities. We don't fast very much in our society. The only real austerities is dancing, chanting, and feasting. But still, it's difficult. Why? Because hearing is very difficult. Actual hearing means we have to give up our false ego, especially if we hear this philosophy. It tells us that not only we're not God, but we never were God. And not only we never were God and we're not God now, but we'll never be God. So that's a great disappointment. Not only we're not God, but we're not even what applies by the meaning of God. Namely, we were never able to control anything. We never controlled anything. We never did anything in the material world. And we'll never be able to do anything in the material world. So that's a big blow to our false ego. We think we've done so much, we've accomplished so much, I deserve so much credit, I deserve so much praise, so much reward, but we've never done anything. In the past, in the present, in the future, all the people that I think owe me something don't owe me anything. And all the people that I think did me wrong, they never did anything wrong to me. It's just a mental conception. And not only that, but I've never been the enjoyer. I've never enjoyed anything. I'm not enjoying anything now. And I'll never enjoy anything in the material world. All I'll do here is suffer to different degrees. And when I'm suffering less, I call that happiness. When I suffer more, then I label it distress. But the material world is a place where we're simply an illusion. And the result of being an illusion is that we suffer, nothing more than that. We suffer to different degrees. When we follow the Vedic injunctions, we suffer less. And we act whimsically, according to our minds, we suffer more. But there's only suffering, and that's all. And then Krishna says we have to hear that. But that's not why we came to this material world, to hear such information. We came here to forget such information. Because to think that I'm on the same level, ultimately, as the worm in the stool, I have nothing to be proud about. That being born in Finland or America or whatever else. Maybe my fortune that I have the opportunity to develop Krishna consciousness. But shortly, I may become a worm in the stool. And the worm in the stool may become a devotee. depending upon how I work in this world, what my desires are, and by the laws of material nature, that worm and stool will gradually be elevated to a human form of life. And if it doesn't misuse, that soul doesn't misuse its independence, may be back to Godhead before I am. Therefore, rather than seeing good and evil, so many dualities in the material world, one should see the world as simply an opportunity to hear about Krishna. And by hearing about Krishna, then one learns the art of utilizing one's body and the mind and the intelligence in Krishna consciousness. And what's the result of that? What should be the result? Not that by doing so, then I'll get a comfortable life. Before, I wasn't using my body, my mind, my words in Krishna's service, and therefore there were so many problems. But when I become a devotee of Krishna and all my sinful reactions are taken away by Krishna, then there'll be no more problems. I'll have a nice, easy, happy life. All my desires will be fulfilled. I'll simply put up my hands, pray to Krishna, and the wealth will be showered down upon me directly from the goddess of fortune. And I won't even have enough, two hands won't be enough to collect all the wealth that he bestows upon me. Now one day I'll go to Dwarka, I'll put a little packet of chip rice in one of the boxes there, and when I come back to my home, I'll have a palace greater than that of Indra, the king of heaven. No, actually the only real result that comes from utilizing our body, our mind and words in Krishna's service is that we get the opportunity to become conscious of Krishna. Whether that consciousness of Krishna takes place while our material body is in a so-called comfortable or an uncomfortable condition, that may not be up to us. That's according to our past activities and by Krishna's arrangement. But still, if one is in all circumstances trying to utilize one's body, mind, and words in Krishna's service, then tate nukam pam susamikshamano Bunjana evatmakritam vipakam ridvag babuvir vidadanamaste jivete yo bhukti pade sadayabhak. That seeing things like that, then even in great misery, one realizes that the misery has come about due to my own past misdeeds. It is not that Krishna does not like me at the present time for some reason. He woke up and had a fight with the goddess of fortune. Now he's angry at everyone, including me. And therefore, his devotees are having a hard time. No one realizes that the arrangements are made by Krishna for my purification, and they come about as a result of my own past activities. But if I go on in following the process of Krishna consciousness, in spite of all good or bad conditions, then I become eligible to get Krishna's mercy. And Krishna's mercy means that somehow or another, in any circumstance, that I become free from the bodily concept of life, and I actually become aware of Krishna's name, his form, his quality, his pastimes. I become conscious of Krishna. So hearing is the beginning, so it's difficult to hear this philosophy. We generally don't trust anyone in the material world. We only trust our body. Whatever our body wants us to do, somehow or another we have faith. If we want to eat something, we have faith. If our mind has some desire, some emotion, we have faith in that emotion. If I hate that person, I think it's worthy. It's a worthy emotion because my mind feels like that. So I should also dovetail my feelings. After all, to contradict my mind is practically it's going against the absolute truth. And if I like someone, no matter how detrimental it may or may not be for my progress in devotional service, then why should I listen to my intelligence? My mind is governing me right now, and I should go along with it. Therefore, one has to realize that service of the body and mind, although necessary, is not the ultimate objective of life, and even that service of the body and mind has to be done according to the rules and regulations coming from higher authorities, namely, ultimately, from Krishna, coming through his authorities. So we have to hear like that, and then we have to follow it. And the result is that gradually our doubts will be cleared away. What is that doubts? We may not get great knowledge about how to solve all the problems in the material world. We may not find out what the origin of the jiva is. We may not find out what the mountains on what Meru looks like. We may not find out many things, but we'll basically find out that we're actually Krishna's eternal servant, that Krishna is God, and we're his eternal servant. As far as all the details go, that may not be possible to know in this lifetime. And if we go back to the spiritual world and we're simply playing as a cowherd boy or a cowherd girl or parent of Krishna, we may never find these things out. So if you want to find these things out, then you'll have to stay around here in the material world and suffer. If your objective is knowledge, then you'll have to come back, maybe on some heavenly planet, to figure out all the things that you want to know. And then by the time you come back, it'll all change anyhow. And then by the time you figure it all out, Brahma will have died and you come back again in some other form of life. Just like in the material world, you may become a great scientist, go to school for 30 years, get your postdoctorate degrees in a very specialized field of science. Everyone may be praising you. You may even receive the Nobel Prize. But you've reached the age of 85, you've gotten the pinnacle of fame, and suddenly you have a heart attack and die. And the next 7 months you spend in the womb of one lady, maybe not a human lady, maybe a dog lady or a pig lady. And when you come out, if you come back in the human form of life, the big scientist who was giving lectures before hundreds of scholars and PhDs, the only thing he can say is, goo goo, goo goo, goo goo, goo goo. So it's simply cultivating knowledge for the sake of cultivating knowledge without culminating in trying to please Krishna will simply give us another opportunity to take another human form of life and, practically speaking, start over again in the quest for so-called knowledge. Although this hearing about Krishna will have a permanent effect, but basically speaking, the whole aim of it is to arrive at the platform of appreciating that myself or anyone else who's performing devotional service, trying to please Krishna with a proper understanding of what will please Krishna, has reached the highest perfection of human life. And in that perfectional level, everyone is the same. Whether one is worshipping the deity, or giving a lecture, or hearing the lecture, or cleaning the temple, anyone who's working sincerely to please Krishna and his devotees in the mood of devotional service, they're doing the highest activity in the highest consciousness. As a matter of fact, if one is doing humble service, he may have a better attitude than someone who's thinking that they're doing exalted service as compared to others. That actually the only thing Krishna is looking for is our attempt to please him in a way that he'd like to be pleased. So here in this chapter, Krishna will explain different types of people who approach him, what their desires are, people who never approach Krishna, what their desires are, how it's very difficult to get out of the material world because material nature is always bewildering us in so many different ways. But if we hear properly, we try to follow properly, we give up aspirations, go to the heavenly planets, merge in Brahman, etc. If we just give up this hankering lamentation, try to please Krishna, then one can reach the highest goal, even in a very short period of time. That is not very difficult, but due to our strong false ego and our attachment to our strong false ego, our attachment to doing something in this material world, either creative or for our own enjoyment or some kind of accomplishment in the material world, apart from pleasing Krishna, this entangles us in the material world. Not that we shouldn't try to do something that's important in Krishna's service, but we shouldn't become attached, being the doer or the enjoyer of the results. Whatever the energies Krishna supply, we should utilize for his service and not be attached to becoming the liberator. The mode of ignorance, we think we're the controller. The mode of passion, we think we're the enjoyer. And even the mode of goodness, we think we're the liberator, we're the savior of others. but neither were enjoying the material world, neither were controlling, nor we ourselves would be the liberator. We can give up our false ego, take shelter of Krishna, and allow Krishna to liberate others through his body, his mind, and his words. Simply, if we don't get into the way, then our reward will be that we'll become free from our false ego, and we'll be able to see how all living entities are on the same spiritual position, the same spiritual level, that we haven't anything to gain in the material world, we have nothing to lose. If we're Krishna conscious, then we've gained everything, and if we're not Krishna consciousness, we haven't gained anything. No matter how much people praise us or blaspheme us, this really has nothing to do with us. We don't even know who we are. Just like sometimes the devotees say, it's good to see you. Or sometimes they don't say that. But in any case, I'm glad they can see me, but I can't even see myself. Maybe they develop some spiritual vision, but I haven't been able to develop that spiritual vision myself. So I'm sure it would be good to see all the living entities as spiritual beings, to actually see ourselves rather than this external body of our prison. To take a look at our body and think that's nice is just like going to a prison and looking inside your prison and saying, what a nice prison I'm in. I couldn't help for a better prison cell. I should take pictures and send it home to my friends so they can see what a nice prison I'm in. I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, in the morning there was this discussion about people who don't understand the books of Srila Prabhupada. So, is it so that they are like doomed to remain in that condition? Or
they're like what?
That they are stuck in that condition? That they can't. You said that it's because they are entangled in sinful life, so they cannot understand Krishna conscious philosophy. So, are they stuck in that condition, or?
Well, we hope not. They're not necessarily stuck. If they get the association of devotees, then they can make further progress. Vishayamini vartante narharasi dehinam rasa varjam rasopyasya param drishva nivartate. The embodied soul may be subjected to his desires of sense gratification, but although he may restrain himself from the sense objects, although the taste from sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he becomes fixed in consciousness. So somehow or another, someone can get a higher experience. Then they may open their path towards taking shelter of Krishna in devotional service. So that depends upon the opportunity at some time to either purify their lives to come to appreciate devotional service somehow or another, or to get the direct association of the devotees. But generally speaking, people who are committing sinful activities, if they think they're enjoying, then it's very hard for them to stop those sinful activities. If they start realizing that they're actually suffering, then they may investigate, is there a better way of living life to actually get free, at least free from my suffering. That's why the biggest weapons the devotees have is their enthusiasm for devotional service. We have nothing else. If people see that we're happy and enthusiastic, as well as if we appear to display some good qualities and have some reasonable knowledge about what we're doing, then people will be impressed, because neither they're happy or enthusiastic about what they're doing for very long, nor do they manifest good qualities under difficult circumstances, nor are they very much aware of actually what's going on, what their destiny is. So the devotees, if they display the higher taste, and some people may, who are reasonable, may investigate, may become curious if they're interested. We don't have to build buildings as big as the materialists in order to impress people, because in doing so, we'll simply become morose. But we have to build our consciousness, our qualities, so that people see that in spite of the fact that we don't enjoy the same type of material arrangements that the materialist enjoys, still we have superior consciousness, superior happiness, freedom from anxiety, and superior awareness of what actually the goal of life is. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, do we have like fixed amount of lamentation and hankering in our karma, or is it possible to stop at once?
Well, we got quite a bit. We have amount. Can we stop it at once? Yeah. Try it. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'll try it.
Okay. Let me know what happens. No, it's not very easy. We can withdraw our senses from the objects temporarily, but generally speaking, if the mind is dwelling on the sense objects, as Krishna says, in karmendriyani samyamya yaste manasasmaran indriyartam vimudatma mityacharasa uchite, that one who withdraws the senses from the objects but his mind dwells on the sense objects certainly bewills himself and is called a pretender. Yastu indriyani manasa niyamya ravitarjuna karmendriya karma yogan asakta savishishite. On the other hand, who engages his active organs and works the devotion without attachment is by far superior. So we're not trying to artificially claim that we become free from all attachment and aversion, but we're trying to regulate our lives in such a way is that we'll be able to think about Krishna to some degree, and by the mercy of Krishna, by his association, our heart will be gradually become purified, and therefore some of the attachment and aversion will go away. But on our own, we won't be able to do anything. Only if somehow or another, by following the process, Krishna becomes pleased and gives us his mercy, his association, can our attachments and aversions gradually go away. But we make a mental effort to get rid of our attachments and aversions, we'll find out we're getting more attachments and aversions. We're becoming more attached to our attachments and more averse to our aversion. They won't go away that way, just by mental effort. Yes?
Guru Maharaj came to our mind, there is this story that the partisan, the Sarasvati Maharaj, he was not so satisfied if somebody was just doing some service without chanting at the same time.
Oh, there's so many stories. There are so many stories. So it's not possible to do every service and chant constantly. You can try, but generally speaking, we're not on that level. Therefore, Prabhupada didn't mention such things. Although he encouraged us to chant all the time, as much as possible, but it's not always possible. Not that you're speaking to someone at the store and while they're talking we're going Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. No, we have to cultivate knowledge so we're able to serve Krishna under any circumstances, and therefore that will be as good as chanting. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.
His Holiness Prabhupada Ananda Swami Maharaj ki jai.